Okie dokies. Welcome everyone. Parshas Shmini Tavshin Pei Dalet 2024. This is probably the first time I spoke in Parshas Shmini because usually Parshas Shmini falls out during Pesach break. But since we had a leap year, so we cash in Parshas Shmini and then we end up losing the next couple of weeks following, which usually begin after Pesach, so we get a little bit of a new parsha this week. So hope everyone's excited to hear something brand new. Now, usually I say things that are brand new, but this one you have a guarantee that I've never said this before because I never spoke about this parsha before. Okay, so quick overview of the parsha. The parsha starts off with these special kavanos. Special offerings or sacrifices that the Kohanim brought, different scenarios if the Kohen Gadol makes a mistake, etc. And then there is a very dark chapter of the Torah. I don't know what just happened, but I'm locked out for some reason on my computer. Hope everything is good. If you can hear me, I'll keep on going. If not, you give me a shout.
We can hear you and we're still seeing you, so I don't know what happened on your end.
No, I don't know. I mean, the whole screen went off, unless it's my screen. Anyways, oh, there you go. Les is upside down. Les, do you always hang out on the ceiling? Not me. Your screen is upside down. Something's wrong, but either way, if everyone can hear me, I'm good. Okay, so, and then the very dark chapter of the Torah, the death of Aaron's two oldest children, Nadav and Avihu, which, if we have time, we'll get to that. Basically, big disagreement, a big machlokes as to what exactly happened. But the basic story was that they did a sin, they sinned. And they got killed by Hashem, and it was a big tragedy. Hopefully, we'll get back to that. There is a basically, and there's a few different kavanos there too. And then after that, in chapter 11, Parak Yud Aleph, chapter 11, the Torah goes through all of the laws of food that we eat. Of animals that are kosher, not kosher, fish that are kosher, not kosher, birds that are kosher, birds that are not kosher, and insects, creepy crawlies, which are all not kosher, but Torah goes to those. And that basically rounds out the parsha. So first we're going to talk about the kosher, not kosher part of the parsha, and if we have time, we'll go back to the story of Nadav and Avihu. Okay, so I think we can all know. If you want, I can just, instead of everyone shouting out because we're on Zoom, everyone just raise your hand. Anyone knows the two simanim, the two signs or symbols that every kosher animal has. There's no such thing as a Jewish animal. Every kosher animal has two signs. Anyone know the signs? As if you put your hand to the floor, then I'll get up. There you go. No, yeah, see, that's better. Because you're still upset. I don't know why. But anyways, I took a picture and sent it to you. But
You want to know? Are you asking us for
no,
this?
I'm just no. I'm gonna take a picture of Leslie just to show Leslie what it looks like on my end.
Or was that a rhetorical question?
I was just trying to be on a point. I would hope that everyone knows. It's very hard to see on my phone. But either way, I'll send it to you after class. You're upside down. Anyways, the point being that I think we all know the animals that are kosher have split hooves and chew their cud. They all chew their cud. And all of the non-kosher animals, they either don't chew their cud or they don't have split hooves or both. Now, the Torah in our parsha lists four animals that either chew their cud or split hooves or half split of, so they have one or the other. And the commentaries, the Gemara talks about it and says that there are only four animals, and no other animal in the entire world will you find one of these simanim, one of these symbols. You'll either have all, both of them, all the kosher animals, or none of them. Only four animals. Does anyone know which four animals? Does anyone know which of these animals are, which animals are the ones that are these four? And then now you can just unmute yourself and go for
the
it.
The rabbit, the camel,
the hydrax,
the pink, the pig, and the hyrax.
The pink pig.
I knew that. That's what they call it in there, Linda Fields. I knew that one, young lady.
Listen, I haven't seen a pig that wasn't pink. You're absolutely right.
And
they get sunburned. They get sunburned too. I just want to tell you, I don't want to get into it.
even piglets is pink.
Yeah, the hyrax doesn't exist anymore.
So it's a very interesting. So fine. So the Torah tells us that these. So you got all four right, correct? Now I'm going to nitpick on what you said. And Linda, since you're so very confident as to the four, I'm gonna ask you if you have any sources to prove.
She didn't know about the pig.
Besides for the Art Scroll English translation, which you may have peeked at.
The commentaries in the of the Parsha.
Right. So the a camel, a gummel, is certainly a camel. Everyone agrees to that. Okay.
Right.
A chazir is certainly a pig, as we can all agree on. Now, a shafan could be a hyrax or some sort of small rodent or whatever. I don't know exactly how to describe it, but it could be anything else. They don't have a clear picture of what that is. And an arneves, very often translated as a rabbit or a hare, is a very difficult one to swallow, because the four are separated. The chazir is on one side. It is the only animal in the entire world, and there's a lot of debates in history and historical debates between the I'm not sure if there were secular Jews or non-Jews, but I believe it was the secular Jews trying to disprove the Torah and against the Chachamim, and the Chachamim stand by the words of Chazal that the Chazir, the pig, is, or any of the species of pigs, is the only animal in the entire world that has split hooves that does not chew its cud. It's the only animal. Take it to the bank. That's what Chazal tells us. So they found an animal, this and that, all the whole thing. One time, I don't remember exactly what the story was, and they did some testing, some DNA testing or whatever it may be. They found that it was some sort of mixture of different animals, and definitely part pig. So that was a good, nice little science that proved the point, or I guess didn't disprove the point, I should say. But the other three are in the reverse. They all chew their cud, and they don't have split hooves. And if you look at a camel, you see the top of its hooves are split, but the bottom, there's some sort of, I don't know what you call it, skin or hide on the bottom that closes it up. So it's not fully split, but they all chew their cud. Now, the question is that our nevus is, as Linda and Steve so beautifully said, a hare or a rabbit doesn't chew its cud. So that's a slight issue, because which is supposed
it
to
does.
Chew its cud. Well, it doesn't chew its cud. So they have some commentaries. They tell us perhaps if it's a rabbit, perhaps the way the rabbits work is they eat their food, they chew it, and they actually let it go out, and then they eat it again, and they do it a second time.
So it looks like it.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a stretch. Some people accept that. But other people say that this is proof that we don't have the English definition of a arneves. And perhaps we just don't know what it is, and that's totally fine. Some other people say it's a different type of camel. It is some sort of other camel. It's a red something camel. I don't know. But the point is that, be it as it may, I'm just trying to bring out these ideas that not everything is so black and white, but they don't pose any issues because we don't have to have the definition. Okay. Now, I just want to focus for a second on a chazir. A chazir is a pig. If I were to ask anyone, I'm sorry, I just spoiled the answer to you. If I were to ask anyone, what is the classic, in Yiddish we would call it, what is the spitz? Spitz is like a pinnacle or a point. What is the spitz non-kosher animal in the world? What is the classic, the typical non-kosher animal in the world? I think we can all agree, everyone will tell you, that it's the pig, chazer. Right? If in Yiddish is an expression, when someone says something or does something that's really bad and awful, you say it's chazer treif. It's chazer treif. It's terrible. It's not kosher. And you make like this with your hand. That's chazer treif. So it's like almost like the classic example of a non-kosher animal is chazer. Now, it's funny because the chazir is one of the four animals that doesn't even have both of the non-kosher simanim. It only has one of the non-kosher simanim. Yet, this is the spitz animal. Now, there's definitely other reasons why it's the classic animal. And there's a lot of Kabbalistic reasons and all that stuff. In fact, if you go to anyone from a Hasidish background, they won't even say the word chazer. Mm-hmm. They'll say, it's called, I'll say in the Yiddish dialect, I'm sorry, in the Hasidish accent, it's called a Yiddish, it's called a duver acher, it means the other thing. They call it the other thing. They don't even use to say it by word, by name. And so there's a lot of Kabbalistic meaning behind this. There's a lot of big discussion about this, not for now. However, there's one point I want to bring out, that the chazir is the only animal that has split hooves, but does not chew its cud. So it's the exact opposite of the other three. Therefore, it's the only animal. Which simen does it have? It has the simen on the outside. You can see the simen. It glares. In fact, when my Rebbe told me this, I don't know if it's documented in the commentaries. Could be it is. Probably is. But one of my Rebbe told me that when a pig sleeps, it always sleeps with its, I can't show you, it always sleeps with its feet sticking out. I can't pick up my feet.
Right.
Always sticks with his hands and feet sticking out to show everyone, look, see, I'm kind of kosher. Kind of kosher, right? It shows everyone, or tricks people, or at least in some sort of way, tricks people that it's kosher. Now, really, it's a fascinating thing because it doesn't have the simen in the inside, but the inside simen of chewing its cud, no one really sees that. Technically, you can see it. If you watch a camel, it's always chewing, but if you watch all the kosher animals, they're chewing. The cows are busy chewing all day, always munching, but by a chazir, if you were an ignoramus, you perhaps would maybe think that it is kosher because it has the kosher simanim on the outside. So this perhaps is the reason why it's the spitz, the classic case of a non-kosher animal. Why? Because some things in the world are really kosher. They're technically kosher, but they look kosher, they smell kosher, they look kosher, but in the inside, they're evil. In the inside, they're bad. In the inside, they take us away from Hashem. And this is really what everything that's non-kosher really stems from this. The idea that it takes us away from Hashem. Now, some of the things that we do in this world, they hide from us. We think that they're good. We think that they feel good. They look good. They taste good. They smell good. But really, 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 the inside, they're not kosher. The inside, they're not good for us. They don't help us come closer to Hashem. So much in this world, it's funny. I just want to bring out this point because it's a very personal note. I just went to the doctor and they put me on this acid-free diet, so I don't want to eat any acids. Now, I've heard of many diets in my life. I've heard of carbs and sugar and fats and all these fancy diets. I've never heard of a no-acid diet. Now, obviously, it could be a slightly slightly agendized because this certain specialty, but the basic idea is definitely true. And they went on to explain how many issues, health issues we have today because of acid. And besides with acid reflux, and then there's different cancers, and there's bloating, and there's inflammation, all these different issues. And again, not part of the class, you're trying to bring in the point. All these issues because of acid. And I was wondering, like, how come no one knows about this? I mean, people know about it, but it's not it's not one of the Ten Commandments of a healthy life. And you say, maybe it is, right? Well, if I agree with the list of all the things that they tell you can't eat, you can't eat anything. So all of a sudden, you start thinking to yourself, or I started thinking to myself, I said, can it really be that all of these things are all so bad for you? And I never knew about it, and no one knows about it. And the answer is, yes, it could be. There's reasons why things are not talked about. I'll give you an example. Any canned vegetables, anything that's in a can, actually. But canned vegetables, they're all highly acidic. Why? Because in the 1970s, they passed a law that if you want to preserve anything, you have to add the acid level to the pH, or lower the pH level and add the acid. So it's lower than whatever it is, 4, I think, on the pH scale. So I never knew about that. Canned vegetables, eating my peas and carrots all the day, all the time, thinking that I'm having a healthy lunch, having my peas and carrots. I didn't have my Danish that day, right? So it's like, what? No one ever told me this. So all of a sudden, you start thinking, wow, this looks good, it tastes good. Yeah, you read the label, it sounds so healthy. And sometimes if you don't know what's going on, you don't realize that there's so much under the surface that's bad for you. So obviously, it's just an example. It's a mushroom, but the basic idea is that in the spiritual world, we see the same thing, where the pig is the simen, the symbol, and it looks good on the outside, it looks kosher, but we always have to look at the inside, what's inside, sometimes what it does to us, sometimes what's inside is not kosher, so to speak. Okay, let's go to the birds. We're going to talk about birds for a few minutes. Rashi, the Torah tells us in, again, chapter 11, verses 13 through 19, okay? Torah lists a lot of birds. Okay, chapter 11, 13 through 19, lists a lot of birds, and I believe in the art school they do a very good job transliterating all the words instead of translating them, because a lot of them don't have any good, clear English translation. Now, if I had to ask you, you could shout out if you want, or you can just raise your hand, is a cardinal, you know the St. Louis Cardinals? So that little red bird, is that a kosher bird? Give me a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Thumbs down, says Dave.
I don't think so.
Thumbs down, says Steve. Thumbs down, says Linda. Leslie's not sure. He doesn't want to put himself in that corner. Alan,
it only
Vivian.
Has one mate, which is nice, but I don't know if it's kosher.
I think
it only has one mate for life.
So Leslie's still upside down, so I'm not sure if he's giving me a thumbs up or a thumbs down or nothing. Okay. What about a blue jay?
No.
Same thing?
Definitely.
Oh, wow. Okay, fine.
If they steal eggs, they're not nice. Hashem would never make them.
Let's think of another sports team. What about a raven? Ooh, that's a good one. Okay, raven is bad. Okay, anyone else? A hawk? Hawks are bad. Hawks
no.
are bad. Okay. I'm not thinking Prince. Of any of those. Oh, very good. So Linda just hit the nail on the head. But we're going to get to that in a minute. So now let's think about it for a second. I'm going to read you the verse. The verses. Now the Torah does not tell you English translation, and the art school doesn't either. But Ela, these are the birds, okay? The Nesher, the Paras, two, Aznia, the Da, the Aya, and its species. The Orev is a raven, so Orev is good. Anyone who said Orev is bad, Orev is a raven. Anyone who said a raven is not kosher, you got the raven in there, good for you. Lost the place. Orev, Basiana, Tachmos, Shachaf, Neitz is a sparrow, I think. Kos Shalach Yanshuf Tenshemes Kas Racham Chasida Anafa Duchifas Anatalev. Okay, 20 birds the Torah lists. Now, if you were compiling a list and you had to list the birds not kosher or the birds that were kosher, which list would you list in the Torah? The one that had less names to read out, especially considering that the Torah is very careful with every word, or the list that had more names? So presumably to save space, or just to be more practical, you would say if there were few kosher birds, like chicken and a turkey and a hen and a goose and a duck, that's five, or maybe I missed a few, but a quail, six, then I would list those and then say every other bird is not kosher, right? From the fact that the Torah lists these 20 birds as being not kosher, we can deduce, not me, the Chazal the Gemara says, that every other bird in the entire world is kosher. So now let's go back to our cardinal. Is it cardinal kosher? Presumably, it wasn't listed in the Mishnah.
It can be kosher, but if the town, if the people.
We'll get there. So. Sorry, then I'm cutting off. Maybe.
Okay.
A cardinal not in there. A blue jay is not in there. Right, I had it when I was a little kid. I had zebra finches as my birds and my pets in my house. That was saying in the Torah. It's probably kosher too. No reason this is not a raven. Raven's bad. So bad Baltimore. Baltimore is bad. I'm joking. Ravens, they're not kosher. It's clearly not kosher. I'll just read you some of the names, some of the classic names. According to most of the commenters, there's many, many different opinions, but I'll read you all the names. I have them written down in my notes. A raven, ostrich, a heron, a vulture, eagle, hawk, sparrow, owls, bats. These are some of the main, I listed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Those are the basic birds that we know. Some of the other birds are a little bit random, a little bit non-conventional. Falcon is another bird that's in there. Different birds that are not kosher. So why, if all of these birds are technically kosher, why do we not eat them? Why do we only eat the birds that we eat? The chicken.
You have to have a masora.
Oh, very good. Thank you, Sarah. Beautiful. So Sarah said something beautiful, which is the true answer. But before I get there, I'm going to talk about what Linda said before, which is the simanim. So the Torah doesn't give any simanim. The Torah doesn't say the simanim of birds are if they pick their nose or if this, right? Or if they chew their cud, because by the animals, the Torah gives us no names at all. And the Torah just gives us signs. And therefore, Ravakasha, you go around, look at the animals, you use a megaphone, you figure it out. And whatever happens, happens, right? It's not a big deal, right? If you come and you get stuck on the island and you have no rabbi to ask, if you have birds, you might be in a little bit of a pickle. But for an animal, you sure it's cut? Yes. Does it have split hooves? Yes. You're in good shape. You may not know how to shot, so you may be in a pickle anyways, but technically you can figure out which animals are kosher. Same thing with fish, by the way. Fish is the same thing. The Torah tells us to have fins, scales, kosher. Great, beautiful. You go to the ocean, you go to the river, you go to the lake, you go fishing, and then you catch a fish. Is it kosher? I have to call the rabbi. No. Fins, scales, kosher. That's it. Easy, easy. You don't even have to shech the fish, so you're in perfect shape. You can eat it. Amazing. But when it comes to birds, the Torah doesn't tell us. The Torah lists a whole list of names. So what's what? We don't know because we don't have the Torah didn't give us pictures. Now, the Medrash does say that when Moshe was saying of all these things, these names, he had a bird. Hashem sent a bird or an animal. All these different things flew by him, and he showed everyone exactly what it was. So during that time, they definitely knew what it was. But over the years, presumably, again, I can't promise that this is true, but presumably, since most of these birds no one eats anyways, because they're not really birds that people eat, because they don't have any flesh really, they're edible so much. So presumably, the tradition got lost because no one really eats them anyway, so we don't know. Now, there's no real practical difference because you don't really eat them anyways. Like even the non-Jews, you go to Schnucks. Right? What are they selling? They're selling a huge section of chicken, and maybe you find some other things also, but it's chicken and turkey. That's all basically they're selling anyway. So that's theirs aren't slaughtered, but same difference. It's we have a misera with when it comes to birds, but the Torah, the Gemara gives us the Gemara in Chulin, Daf Nun Tes Amud Aleph, page 59a, gives us a few different simanim, a few different signs that can discern, can help us discern which birds are kosher. One of the signs, the most important sign the Gemara says, is that all of the birds in the Torah are birds of prey. Birds of prey are not kosher. All of the birds that are not listed in the Torah are not birds of prey, and they are kosher. That's what the Gemara says. Very clear, very distinct, very black and white. And the Gemara says you can't really take it to the bank, like we'll see in the Shulchan Aruch, says that you need a Masura, you need a tradition for it. We have to have a Masura that this bird is kosher. However, if we have some sort of Masura, and we can always use the Simanim to prove the Masura. And it seems from the Ramban or some of the other Rishonim that even without a Masura, they would be willing technically to allow it. The custom is not to do that. The custom is to only allow us to eat the birds if there's a Masura, but there are even some of the big Rishonim that allow it without a Masura. This Simen, the Simen of not being a bird of prey. There are other Simanim. One Simen is has an extra, I don't know if anyone's familiar with birds, but I have birds as a child, so I know how it works. A lot of birds have the little feet in the front, and there's an extra foot or something, or toe, I guess you call it, in the back. And when it lands on a string or a wire or a branch, it latches on like that. So there's always a toe or a leg in the back. So the Gemara says that's one. Another simon, that's not a perfect simon because there are a few that don't follow that, but for the most part, that's a good sign that it's a good, that's a kosher bird if it has the thing in the back. Another one, if the korkovan is the gizzard, if the gizzard peels, it's kind of peels instead of breaking apart. Another sign, these are things that we maybe 50, 100 years ago, or maybe 50 years ago, I don't know exactly how long ago, where people, it was common for people to take apart the animals and salt them in their own home. So if you salted a chicken, you were able to pull out the gizzards. But I have no idea what a gizzard looks like, really. So I can't tell you what that means. But the toes, and that I've seen, so that I know. So anyways, this is the idea of by birds. So then again, like Sarah said, the Shulchan Aruch says that, however, we have to have a Masura, a straight Masura that these are kosher birds. So what's the Masura? We have Masura with very few birds. We have a Masura, why? Presumably, like we said before, these were the common birds that everyone ate. That's why we have a Masura. So we have duck, we have goose, we have chicken, we have, I said a few more, but I forgot. Quail, maybe, is a whole discussion. Even turkey is a big discussion because in Europe, they didn't have turkeys really in Europe, right? The turkey is, I don't know where it came from, but it's an American bred bird. And there's a whole discussion among the early rabbis in America in the 1800s, maybe even earlier, maybe even in the 1700s, about exactly what the status of a turkey is. The common custom, as we all can imagine, is yes, we do eat turkey, but there are definitely people you'll bump into across the different areas of Judaism that won't eat turkey. There are people that don't, because they don't believe that the Mesorah, the tradition, is not good. But we generally follow that the tradition is good. Okay. Let us... so we have like 10 minutes, so I don't know if we have time. We'll talk about it in very, very, very in brief. We'll get back. Let's go back to the part of the Torah that talks about the sin of Nadav and Avihu. Now, to put it in the context, right in the beginning of chapter 10, to put this into context, okay, imagine we had imagine we had a big building campaign for, we use a user-friendly example, because it's, let's say the Kolel. Theoretically, the Kolel, they wanted to build a building. So they make this big board meeting, and they invite the big donors, and they have a whole discussion about raising money. Have a planning committee, and they're busy planning, and they have the seed money in there, and then they hire an architect, they make plans, and then months and months work, and then they go to the zoning board, they get a zone, and then they start raising more money, and they get more people to chip in, and then they, after couple of years, they finally have it all together, and they have a big groundbreaking ceremony, and they have the rabbi wearing the hard hat and with the shovel, and they pour the cement in and the whole production, and then they're building, and every day you're walking back and forth checking out the building, see what's going. They just finished the foundation, and oh, beautiful, they put up the frame, and then in that couple of weeks later, oh look, they put up the roof, and then a couple of weeks later, oh, you see they're putting the bricks on and they're putting the windows in, and then and the tiles and putting in the plumbing, and as the months go by and you're waiting with anticipation, whole thing, and you know, everything's so beautiful, everything's so exciting, and then finally the big day of the Chanukah Sabayis, of the big ceremony, the great ceremony, and everyone standing there, the whole city comes piling in, and everyone's busy there, and they have a big music and dancing, all singing, everyone's excited. And then the rabbi gets up to speak, the big Rosh Kolel, whatever the case is, and he has his two prized prodigies, his two children are standing next to him. Everyone's proud, everyone's thinking, he's busy giving a fiery speech, and in the middle of the inauguration, in the middle of the Chanukah Habayis, his two children drop dead from a heart attack. Imagine that for a moment. That is basically what happened in the parasha this week. After the whole story, we talked about it so many times, all different weeks, all different stories about the building of the Mishkan, and they finally had 7 days of inauguration, and on the eighth day was the first day of coming and actually doing the real service, Aaron himself doing the service himself, and his two children go and bring some, again, it's a whole discussion in the commentaries exactly what they did wrong. Let's just take the simple version, the classic version, that either that they brought in Ketores to the Holy of Holies, to the HaKadosh Kedoshim, that was not a Yom Kippur, and they weren't technically, they weren't Kohanim, they weren't the Kohen Gadol, they were only regular Kohanim. Therefore Hashem came and brought a fire down, instead of burning the incense, burning the Ketores, brought a fire, and it consumed them, went up through their nostrils, into their body, destroyed their entire body, left their outside of the body completely intact. There was a miraculous fire. The entire outside of the body was completely intact, and the whole inside was burnt up. This is such a terrible tragedy. Imagine the feelings that the Jewish people had. Imagine the feeling that Aaron himself had, losing his two children were his greatest children, the two greatest people not ever of you. Imagine this. All the festivities is just gone. And the music is, I don't want to give any examples, but you can think of an example that would be a similar style, may from great joy to terrible catastrophe, terrible disaster in recent history, that would maybe give us a glimpse of some sort of style of what happened. But this is, it's just a terrible tragedy. So what does Moshe tell Aaron? Moshe tells Aaron something very interesting. After, as a consolation, so I'm sorry, I skipped this step. What does Aaron do? Okay. Aaron does something very interesting. Right over here in chapter 10, verse 3, the Yamar Moshe Aaron, who Asher Diber Hashem Lemar, Bekroivai Ekadesh, So Moshe gives Aaron a consolation. He tells him, put it in English. Of this did Hashem speak, saying, he says, oh, Hashem told me this, and now I understand. This is the quote. I will be sanctified through those who are nearest me. Thus I will be honored before the entire people. That is the consolation. That is how he consoled him. And how does Aaron respond? And Aaron was silent. Aaron got tremendous reward for being silent. He didn't complain, didn't say anything. He just said he has emunah in Hashem. He has trust in Hashem. That Hashem, everything is for the good. Everything's for the best. Doesn't say anything. Keeps quiet. He has tremendous merit for this. He gets rewarded for this later on. But we see from our own, as we explain how the context fits in and who his children are, he didn't say anything. He didn't complain, didn't say anything. He just said, I accept it. Didn't say anything. That's the greatest response a person can possibly give. What does Moshe say? Moshe says like this. Bekrovai ekadesh. God says that I'm going to be sanctified by the people nearest me. So the comment that Rashi explains, Moshe thought when he heard this prophecy from Hashem that he or Aaron was going to get killed because they are the closest to Hashem. He tells Aaron, now I recognize, now I understand that your children, Nadav and Avihu, they were the closest to Hashem. They were the ones Hashem took instead of us. Clearly, they were the closest. They are holier than us. So it's an interesting thing. Although on one side of the coin, that just magnifies the tragedy. And it magnifies the whole sequence of events, how terrible it was. On the other hand, that was the epitome of what could console Aaron, where Moshe tells Aaron the reason why they were the ones that Hashem took were because they were holier than us, because they were more special than us, because they were more dear to Hashem than us. Now you can go, so to speak, now you can go to sleep thinking that my children were so holy, they were way holier than we could ever imagine them. And this is just a beautiful thought. Sometimes we get lost in tragedy. Sometimes we get lost in tragedy, and we wallow in self pity, and we wallow in why. And Aaron is showing us, of course, Aaron is the most extremely spiritual, most extremely pious way to respond to tragedy. But Aaron is showing us nothing. Everything's from Hashem. And Moshe says, a little bit of a consolation. You think it's so bad. Perhaps it is bad. But a little bit of a consolation you can have. And now you recognize that they are greater than us. Now you recognize that your children were even greater than you. How special is that? How everyone would want to hear although everyone loves for themselves to be so special, themselves to be so great, everyone would be happy to hear that their children succeeded or superseded or did outdid them, or did something greater than them. That's the idea, at least the first idea. And there's much more to talk about in the story of another review, but I think that will be it for this year. Maybe next leap year we'll catch in on Parshas Shmini again. Anyways, have a wonderful Shabbos. Thank you.